Welcome back to the Hoops Not Bull podcast. Y'all know me, Nathan Schwartz. Joining me from New Zealand, Dylan Williamson.
Good morning, Nate.
Good morning, Dylan. We've just had one hell of a Sunday. Were you able to watch the games? Were you awake? What time were they going on for you?
There was this interesting dynamic, which was all the games started early and all ran at the same time. So normally I can get in like a good afternoon game. Like sometimes I'll get like a 4:30 game and it's like, oh yeah, this is real good, especially on the West Coast. But most games started at 5 a.m. for me today. And the late games were 7:30 a.m. By the time I woke up, the East was wrapped, but I managed to get in some Western Conference games. Although what seemed like it was going to be a really exciting day of basketball, you know, a whole lot of playoff implications. There were like no good games today.
Yeah, I started with Bucks Magic, and then I went on to Suns Wolves. And like, they should have been competitive. They were somewhat close. I loved the thing that you put in our group chat, which was just Dallas intentionally throwing the game in for OKC.
Yeah, no, there was Dallas had a chance to get to the four seed on a Dallas win and a Clippers loss. The Clippers had the Rockets, who had absolutely nothing to play for, who should have been trying to lose. They played pretty well. But yeah, the Mavs could have got the four seed if the Clippers lost to the Rockets, which probably didn't seem likely to start the day, given that the Rockets are trying to lose and the Clippers are theoretically trying to win. And then the Mavs would have had to win against OKC, which is pretty difficult. OKC, they're the best regular season team in the West. But the Mavs decided that they wouldn't bet on the Clippers losing and try to, you know, play a grinded out game with OKC, and that they'd phone it in. They'd take the five seed. The 4-5 was already locked up, so they were going to be playing the Clippers no matter what, and it was just home court that was on the line. But by losing to the Thunder, they ensured that OKC would be the one seed and they would be on the OKC side of the bracket rather than potentially Denver's.
I love that. That's the chicanery that you get when all of these games come down to the final day. Like, I was watching Milwaukee Orlando, and I was like, and Milwaukee doesn't seem like they're trying that hard. Like, Middleton, he has moments, he has spots. I was like, oh, if they lose this, they don't have to play the Philly-Miami, debacle. They instead get to play Indiana, which may or may not be the best thing for Milwaukee. We'll get into that later. Where do you want to start this? You want to start playing in the West or playing in the East?
Both are fairly interesting, to be fair. You've got a lot of actually really interesting teams. You've got the three quarters of the bloody Pacific Division. Let's talk East, because it's a little bit more top-heavy.
Okay, East. I'm just going to read out the order that things ended up being. The one seed is Boston. Two seed is the Knicks. Three is Milwaukee. Then we've got Cleveland, Orlando, Indiana. Then our play-in bracket, Philly, Miami, Chicago, Atlanta. Starting at the bottom, because we're a glutton for punishment, Chicago versus Orlando. Did some digging here. The Bulls lead the series 2-1. Trey has only played in two of the games. But in those two games, she's shooting 29% from the floor, 22.7% from three. Since returning from his injury, Trey is just 15 points per game, not counting today's game because that was still wrapping up when I'm tracking out stats. Today, he put up 12 points, 12 assists with 8 turnovers, nearing the dreaded turnover triple-double. But the most recent victory did see Atlanta beat Chicago, thanks to Vit Krejci going 6-for-6 from downtown. Dylan, what are we feeling? Single game. Who are we taking?
This is one of those games that when the play-in was developed, this is like the thing that you didn't want to see. Where you've got like two teams that are so clearly below everyone else. Chicago at 9 are 7 games out of 8. Like, there's a big drop-off between the 8 seed and the play-in. Atlanta, in theory, should have a higher upside. They'll probably have the best player in the game.
DeJounte Murray.
Play-in legend Trae Young. But like you said, Chicago has played the Hawks really well. And one of the things that Chicago does really well is they've got a lot of really good guard defenders. They managed to get to a really solid level of defense while having one of the worst defensive centers in the league and not a lot on the forward line. You know, DeMar DeRozan, again, is one of the worst defensive power forwards in the league. But between Caruso, Dosunmu, they've got guys who can guard guards, and that's, I think, is a tough matchup for Atlanta, who are a guard-heavy team, guard-dependent team.
Looking back at it, the games where Atlanta went lights out from three, which the one game they did that, they won. The other two games, they really struggled, and they end up losing. The other interesting thing that happened in this series during the regular season was this was one of the Drummond 20-20 games. So, you know, I do like what Capella and Onyeka Okongwu bring, but they are both a little undersized, and I do kind of wonder if Chicago can beat them up on the glass.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see with how much Vucevic plays. He has their starting center. He's their, I think, their third leading scorer. He's making the big bucks, and he's probably worse than Andre Drummond. So it'll be interesting to see whether they do go to a lot of Drummond and try to, you know, create another advantage of being able to get out on the offensive glass, or whether they do try to get more of an offensive game. Because, you know, in theory, Atlanta's going to be bombing. The way that they can win this game is by outscoring the Bulls from 3-point.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, the one win that they had was the one game that they managed to pull that off. So maybe you want to have the offensive center to try to keep up. But that could be another advantage for Chicago. Another 20-20 for Andre Drummond.
Let's make it happen. The head says the Bulls are winning. I'm cheering for the Hawks because my boy Vit just want to see it.
Mm. Yeah, is Vic Creature going to start?
I don't know. I did fire up one of their games since Trey came back. I don't think he's in the starting lineup now that Trey is back.
Mm. They've got Harrison Barnes at the 3 and Harrison Barnes at the 4.
Whoa. Okay, they haven't been starting in Jalen Johnson, so that's fine. You can call. I have no problem with you calling in DeAndre Hunter, Harrison Barnes.
Harrison Barnes East.
God, that you get the Paul Millsap exchange, just devaluing play, or oof, yeah. That's I don't love it. All right. So the 7-8. This is the murderer's row. Philly versus Miami. If you're Boston or New York, who do you want to see less?
That is tough, you know, because in theory, Philly is the much better team. They were the best team in the NBA when Joel Embiid was healthy, and they couldn't win a game without him, but now he's back. So, you know, are they going to be the best team in the NBA again? Definitely one that you don't want to catch. But Miami is like the Celtics kryptonite.
Mm-hmm. I think if I'm Boston, I'm cheering for Miami to win this because I want to face Philly early while Embiid's still kind of working his way back. He's moving well, but he seems to be avoiding contact a little bit more now than usual.
Definitely not 100%.
Yeah. Like, I like the fluidity of moves. Maybe he's just ramping up slowly, just trying to play it safe. But I don't feel like he's going to the glass as hard. I feel like smaller hits are pushing him farther, and he seems to be really kind of favoring and trying to stay healthy. So I'd much rather face him now than later down the line. Because I think if he gets a slow ramp up, it could be a tough series.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting thing where you've got, not that Boston has any control over this, but once again, where you've got the sort of dynamic of, do you want which team do you actually want to win to give you that series? And where do you want, sort of side of the bracket do you want certain teams on? And yeah, so that is an interesting thought that you get Philly, who is on paper healthy, the much better team, whereas Miami have looked like a pretty much an 8 seed throughout the entire season. You get Philly early rather than you risk Embiid playing himself into shape and having to catch them in the later stages.
You also do, you know, always have the chance of Embiid not playing himself into shape, playing himself into another injury and getting hurt and then never having to face them. So it's kind of a 50-50 scenario. On the flip side, I don't want to see the 76ers if I'm the Knicks. Like, Embiid is very good at basketball, and that's an understatement, but I don't like their post defense against him. I think he can pull out Mitchell Robinson, and then Isaiah Hartenstein just doesn't have the size to take that sort of physical pounding. So I don't feel like it's a great matchup. He's gonna get 35 a night, if not more, basically every game.
Yeah, no, I agree. So maybe this is a situation where both teams are sort of hoping for the same thing, and it's a Philly win, Philly at 7.
Wait, no, the Knicks are not hoping for Philly at 7. The Knicks are very much not hoping for Philly at 7.
Of course. Okay, then we've got a competition. I want to see, how awesome would it be to see like the Celtics and the Knicks like sitting courtside in the playing game? Like, come on.
That would be, you know, and this gives the opportunity. Someone totally could do that. Draymond's definitely going to be at a Lakers game, right? Like, what are the odds on that?
But you don't think like Jason Tatum in a Sixers jersey would sitting courtside would be amazing?
Only if it's a Jimmy Butler. He just shows up in the Jimmy Butler 76ers jersey.
Now we're talking. Or you go like a similar level of troll. He just rocks up in a Tobias Harris jersey. He's like, let's go, Tobias.
What if he shows up in an Al Horford 76ers jersey?
Oh,
what if Al Horford shows up?
Perfect.
There's no Heat tie-in for that, though. But as far as how these two teams actually have matched up against each other, it's a 2-2 season series between them. Most recent game, April 4th, with Miami, Philly won. Embiid, not the best. The kind of Embiid without maxi minutes were a big loss. But they also like couldn't hit a three. Buddy Hield was 0 for 4. Batum was 0 for 4. Tyrese Maxey had a fantastic game with 37 points. You know, I don't know how much we can take stock in just that one game, but I do kind of worry about Miami's ability to contain Maxey. I don't love any guard defender that they have on that team.
Mm. You don't think T. Rozier is a secret Tyrese Maxey stopper? They traded a first-round pick for him. What is it for if not to guard point guards?
It's supposedly offense. Did they really give up a first? Is that what the going price was?
That's why I did the trade.
God, I don't remember them paying that much. That's a lot. And I do remember Rozier having his like 30-10 stretch for like six games. But man, that just feels like a lot looking back on that. So who are you taking?
Tough matchup. It's close, man. I'll I think Bam is a really good matchup for Embiid.
He is.
But the counter to that, of course, which you just brought up, is they don't have a great matchup for Maxey. A great Maxey up. I'll call the upset here. I'm going to take Miami. I like Jimmy in a single game being guarded by Nick Batum more than I like Embiid being guarded by Bam.
I also got to wonder if maybe you just unleash Jimmy on Maxey and you say, all right, Jimmy's going to be in this guy's jersey. I don't know if he has that in him anymore at this point.
Yeah.
To like stick with that quick of a guard, but... You know, if the NBA swallowed the whistle in the regular season, are they going to swallow it even more in the postseason? He's just going to be able to grab Maxey and really get physical with him on defense. I like it.
And it might not be perfect, but that might be their best option when they really need a stop is Butler or Maxey. Mm.
All right. Well, that brings us up to the 3-6 matchup. We got the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Indiana Pacers. Because of the in-season tournament, these teams have played each other 5 times. The Pacers have won 4, the Bucks just once. But one victory, of course, sparks flew afterwards. Giannis won the game ball. Pacers supposedly took it to give it to Oscar Shidway.
The fuck is Oscar Shidway?
What was he, like the 38th pick of the draft? He scored his first NBA points. Nope, undrafted. Yep, this man has scored a grand total of, I don't know, I suppose if I didn't click away from that screen, it would tell me. Man has scored a grand total of 26 NBA points, but because he scored his first in the same game, Giannis scored for 60, they tried to give him the game ball.
I can't wait for the fourth quarter, Giannis ISO on Oscar Shidway. then just trading buckets back and forth.
Yes, Shidway with his 26 points all year.
Yeah, 26 points in the plan, I'm calling it. Take the Oscar Shidway over.
I think I'm taking the Oscar Shidway under if you put 26 minutes as the line.
I'll probably take the under at 2.6 minutes.
Yeah.
But yes, I think it's a rough matchup for Indiana.
Really?
Like, Siakam does have good size to defend Giannis. Off the top of my head, I don't remember him doing a good job on him in the past. And they do have that nice dynamic where they've got a big four and then also rim protecting center, which is sort of the way that you've got to align your team to go against Giannis. And Turner should have adequate mobility if he needs to, you know, close out on Brook Lopez raising the ball for 4.5 seconds before it releases. But Halliburton, I wonder how much he even plays in this series. It definitely seemed like coming back from injury, he was not 100% and he was trying to get to the 65 games. And so in a 3-6 matchup, their first year in the playoffs, as the underdogs, I wonder how much they're going to overexert him, or if they just say, if it starts not going well, if he ends up playing, you know, 30 minutes a game.
I think you got to play him. I think you play him as much as you can. I went and grabbed the numbers to see how he's been looking of late. Last 10 games, we're at 19 points per game, 9 assists per game, but he's back up to 40% three-point shooting, 39.5. And like that had kind of been the thing, is his scoring and playmaking had dramatically decreased volume-wise, but also the efficiency had come way down. With that coming back up, I'm more nervous on the Bucks side of things. Just Giannis, he has his Well, if Giannis is hurt, Pacers are the favorites, right? Like, if Giannis can't play, Indiana has to be the favorite, no?
I probably still take the Bucks without like, maybe, there's... maybe... It seems we've got a difference in opinion on the current state of the Indiana Pacers.
Fair. Pacers have not been as good since their early season run. And I think a lot of that's just been Haliburton hasn't been able to push the pace, run the tempo. And then the loss of Buddy Hield. They don't have quite the shooting. I was looking at Nesmith's numbers.
Yeah, I think that's an underrated factor for the Pacers as well, is that a lot of their early season success was this sort of space and pace idea. And now... Haliburton has slowed down, which has hurt them. Obi Toppin, for all of his limitations, was a really good transition power forward who pushed the pace. Siakam is really effective in transition, but he doesn't seem to be quite as keen on it as Obi does. But then the other thing is that the three-pointers without Hield, I think the three-point game's really dropped off. He was a big factor for them being able to push the pace, to create space, to bomb threes. They were a high-volume, high-paced team, and that let them juice their offense. And now they are a little bit slower, and they can't shoot as many threes, let alone at as good a percentage.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up. Since the trade deadline, they have shot 35% from three prior to the trade deadline, because I don't fully remember when he was traded. I think it was before the deadline, but I don't remember what day exactly. So using the deadline as a guide, prior to the deadline was 38%. So that is a sizable difference. I fear a 38% three-point shooter. At this point, a 35% three-point shooter is, you know, not great to leave open, but not someone that I'm going to sell out to try to stop.
Yeah, it's the difference between being a good three-point shooting team and a bad three-point shooting team.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I really feel like the Bucks without Giannis don't have a backup front line. Like, when it's Giannis, Portis, and Lopez, you can get away with always having two of those guys on the court. And if you go small, you only need one. Watching them play Orlando today, when you rested Lopez, you had to have Portis in there at the five. And then their next biggest guy was Jay Crowder out there. And it's Orlando. Orlando's got a bunch of big guys. Jonathan Isaac was eating on the boards. Goga Batase, he was getting it on the boards. Like, Indiana's not necessarily going to be able to beat up the rebounding numbers. They don't have those types of bigs. But I do just kind of worry. I think Milwaukee's really limited if Giannis isn't 100%.
I think their overall team quality is just still quite a lot better than Indiana. And, like, they've got enough guys to put together an eight-man rotation without Giannis. You know, it's probably going to be a lot of Patrick Beverley, who, you know, he could actually make life fairly difficult for Tyrese Haliburton if he doesn't have 100% of his burst. But yeah, I think they've got enough. If Chris Middleton is healthy and Dame is healthy, I think they've still got enough. And then Giannis is the big difference maker.
So you're not worried?
Not really. Not in the first round.
Okay. What are you putting this series at?
Like, Bucks and... I don't want to say Bucks and six every series. Yeah, probably Bucks and six.
That's very funny. We're ending in the same place as Bucks and six. Although...
All right, fine. Bucks and five. Let's go.
There we go.
I can't spend the entire segment talking about how bad Indiana is as a matchup and then say they're going to go one win away from a game seven. We'll go Bucks and five.
I remember, like, 2 years ago when it was you, me, and Nico, we did you have to pick a 4, 5, 6, and 7 for each of the series. So it wasn't like a true fair analysis of us, like, saying it, but we had to pick which one was going to be the sweep, which one was going to be the game seven. Because otherwise, you just do these playoffs and you're like, ah, this is six, this is six, this is six. Like, just feels respectful.
Yeah, I think this is the closest to a sweep that we'll see in any first round matchup, I think.
Before we move further or up the bracket, I do just want to double back. Who do we pick, Miami or Philly?
I think I'll win Miami.
You win Miami. I'm going to say Philly. So then if we have a Miami or Philly versus Chicago, are we just totally chill saying whoever? Yeah. Good. Just wanted that on the record. I wanted us to acknowledge that the 9-10 in the East means nothing.
If we get fucking Boston versus Chicago first round, it's going to ruin my day.
If we get Boston versus Atlanta first round, it's going to make my day. Atlanta just beat them twice. Do I think that matters? No. Should Boston fans quake in fear and, like, keep their feet under the covers, up on the bed, not check the closet, not look under the bed because the Atlanta boogeyman's coming for them? No. But I'd love to see it.
When it'll be another DeJounte Murray, 40 points on 42 field goals.
Okay. That was sad. All right, the 4-5 matchup. The Slugfest, the NBA TV series, Cavaliers versus Magic. What are your thoughts?
Can you remind me who the Cavs played? It was the Knicks last year, right? In the first round?
Yes, the Cavs played the Knicks, got bodied, got bullied, got beat up, and run off the court.
And now they're going up against sort of this year's equivalent of the Knicks, which is this really solid defensive team with sort of the one go-to scorer. So I do like the matchup for the Magic, especially if Donovan Mitchell is not going to be 100%. He still seems like he's playing his way back in.
And the Magic have good options for defending him. And I was watching the game earlier today, and it was over before you woke up, but they started your boy. They started Jonathan Isaac at the five.
Oh, my Lord.
So it was him, Suggs, and Gary Harris, which like it is a very talented defensive trio. And then like Franz has plenty of length. He pokes the ball free on Portis and then just went down. Like he had his good moments. Paolo's got good size defensively. To end the half, Suggs had picked up a foul. And I forget who was the one guard out there that they still had. But they threw in Jonathan Isaac. So then was Jonathan, like Goga, Franz, Paolo, and one guard. And it was just this massive defensive lineup for the final possession of the half. I feel like, though, I have to take the Cavs. Mitchell may not be 100%, but I don't trust the young teams as much. And then Evan Mobley, I feel like he's not a good five defender. I mean, he's made strides and he can't really guard out on the perimeter as well, but he's good at guarding like true fours. And I think that's what Paolo is. Like if you had to design a player in a lab for Evan Mobley to defend, you probably defend or design Julius Randle. But then the next best guy you design is Paolo, right?
Yeah, no, that is a tough matchup. I was very tempted to pick the Magic in an upset because I do think that their defense is going to give the Cavs a lot of struggle. But the Cavs also a really good defensive team. And, you know, Mitchell and Garland going up against probably the best defensive guards in the league, especially with the guy that I think we both picked for all defense. Was that last week or the pod before?
Yeah.
And Jalen Suggs. But I do think that Orlando's going to struggle to get baskets because Cleveland is not this one-way team. They actually are a really good defensive team. Low scoring, but I think that the Magic are just going to really struggle to get shots. The one way that they can get out of this is that Paolo just ascends to another level and Evan Mobley, who's this ideal defender against him, just actually can't do that much with him, can't do that much with the shift in his creation.
I don't see it happening yet. But I am really excited to start have this new leaf turning over. I mean, we'll see it more when we talk about the West. It's not LeBron era anymore. It's not the Durant era anymore. It's not the Curry era. Giannis, Jokic, these are the top players of the league. Luka is a top player in the league. But we're starting to get the young guys moving into playoff pictures. There's Mobley being a third-year guy, Paolo being a second-year guy. Like, this is exciting. I'm very excited to see these young guys getting their first real taste of playoff action.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see because the conventional wisdom is that young players don't play well in their first playoff series. But actually, the elite young players kind of do have a history of, you know, sort of breaking that mold and having really good performances. Paolo is maybe the kind of guy that I could see doing that. And that's what the Magic are going to need to pull off the upset. But I'll take the Cavs. Due to home court, we'll give them seven games though.
I'm gonna go Cavs in five.
Ooh, I like it.
I really think Donovan Mitchell is a different level of playoff player. I also don't fully trust Orlando's defense. Like they've got really good defensive players, but I think Suggs can get baited into bad situations. He had just three boneheaded fouls on Middleton in the second quarter. You know, one of them was a fine foul. Two of them were just dumb. Where like he just kind of got baited into it. It just overexerted himself, tried to do more. I think Donovan's going to be able to get Suggs in foul trouble, get him out of the game. And I think what the Cavs saw last year and what they kind of went through is going to really have them prepared for this year. And just Orlando having not gone through it, not having anyone with much playoff experience. I mean, Joe Ingles and Gary Harris are the vets with the playoff chops. Jonathan Isaac's the only guy to have playoff experience in a Magic uniform. Like, that's been a minute. So I think this one's going to be less close than we think it will.
All right, you talked me down to Cavs in six.
Yes. All right. Ready for the West?
The bloodbath.
The blood.
Let's just pick every game in seven, every series in seven, and we can run through it.
Kings Warriors play a game seven.
Seven overtimes before a winner is announced.
West standings. We've got the OKC Thunder as the one seed, followed by Denver, followed by Minnesota, the LA Clippers, Dallas Mavericks, Phoenix Suns rounding out our top six playoff locks. The play-in, you have the New Orleans Pelicans, the Los Angeles Lakers, Sacramento Kings, and Golden State Warriors setting up for a Kings-Warriors 9-10 matchup. These two teams have played each other twice. They've not played since January 25th, so nothing in recent months. Kings have won the last two, but the last three times these teams have played each other, can you guess the point differential if you add up those three games? So two Kings wins, one Warrior win.
Zero.
1 point.
Jeez.
All three games were decided by 1 point.
God.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to this one.
Is this a repeat from last year?
They did play each other seven game series last year. This is the Draymond stomping on Sabonis' chest.
That's right. God, what a goon.
So I pulled up the last time they played each other's box scores. Harrison Barnes' revenge game, 39 points for him, but also Kuminga went off for 31.
Very nice.
What are you thinking? What are you feeling?
Leaning Warriors, and I think it's going to have to be Kuminga who does it. De'Aaron Fox has taken a lot of steps forward over the last couple of years in terms of his defense, and I think now he actually is a very good matchup to defend Steph Curry. I think he's sort of become one of the best guard defenders in a playoff series where in a play-in game. I think he's going to be really locked in, and I think he's a great matchup for Curry. Sacramento, they've managed to build a roster that has no small forwards on it, and so I think it's an opportunity for Kuminga to have a really good game. Draymond is a good matchup for Sabonis. The Kings not having Malik Monk or Kevin Huerter limits them so much offensively, where it's now just a lot on Fox and Sabonis. Sabonis is one of those players who his other people create opportunities for him to create for them, which is a very complicated way of saying I think he needs good players playing off of him to put him in positions where he can have an offensive impact. And Huerter is one of those guys running handoffs. Malik Monk as a pick and roll player is one of those guys. And so I'm concerned about what he's going to be able to do, especially going up against a good, really good individual post defender in Draymond Green, who I think we did mention in the all defensive discussion, although he didn't make any of our teams.
He didn't make the games requirement.
Yeah.
We couldn't have.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think it's, and I can only say this because Aaron isn't here. I think it's the Warriors taking this one.
Aaron did text me and ask me to be kind to the Warriors. And I responded back that, you know, 16 season playoff droughts don't come along that often. I felt like that was kind, right? You know, you're going to miss it this year, but like, it won't be 16 more years, right? So the Golden State has been trotting out a new big three starting five with Wiggins, Green, and Trace Jackson Davis. That three-man lineup has only played 115 minutes together prior to today's game. Don't know how much they played today's game, but they're a positive 16 points per 100 possessions. Their defensive rating is 98 points per 100 possessions. It's the bounciness of Jackson Davis being able to catch lobs and be another rim protector, or which kind of reallows everyone to do what they do best. I think that's going to carry the day for the Warriors, kind of this rededication, recommitment to defense, because Curry can always score. Like, that was always kind of the thing, was the Warriors got good on defense first.
Yeah, they were a defensive team.
Yeah, under Mark Jackson, they were an awesome defense. And then Kerr's like, hey, you know those 22-foot jumpers? Maybe make them 24. Let's see what that does. And now that's the NBA we have today. But yeah, I think it's going to be Golden State. Although just looking at how closely these teams have played each other over the last two seasons, it's really close.
I should just mention as well, for the sake of completeness, before Aaron writes in an angry email as an anonymous listener, Keegan Murray is a very good defender at the three. However, I prefer him. I think he does his best work actually guarding smaller players and sticking with quicker players. We saw him do a really good job on Steph Curry, for example. Whereas Kuminga, I think, has a physicality advantage over him.
I think Keegan's had kind of an up and down year. Start of the year, he was trying to do a little bit more, a little bit more creation. He's had some success with it. I think it's just the classic sophomore slump. I think next year Keegan will be a significantly better player than what he's seen this year. And I'm not too worried about him. Like, he's not going to guard Kuminga well. They don't have a great Kuminga matchup. It should be Harrison Barnes. It won't be Harrison Barnes.
he'll do a great job of guarding him to an efficient 32 points.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But Keegan, I think, tried to take on too much and got on team scouting reports this year. It's easy to catch people by surprise when you're the rookie and having as great of a year as he did. This year, teams were able to adjust. I think third year will be more of a level set year where he kind of knows where teams are at on it and we'll start to see more growth.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I'm very high on Keegan Murray as a two-way player going forward. But I don't think this is the year for him to be the X factor. Do you think we're putting too much faith in Kuminga, who actually hasn't had, you know, a great track record as being this type of player that we are maybe expecting him to be in this game?
I'm not too worried about Kuminga being a great player in this game. Like, if Kuminga has 15 versus 30, it's not a huge deal in my mind, just because I think the Warriors have enough other advantages. I think with their new starting five, they have a really good defensive lineup. I will still say I think Curry is better than De'Aaron Fox just on any given night. So I am going to say they've got the best player in this series. And then offensively, Sacramento is kind of grasping for weapons right now. I mean, Keon Ellis is good, but last year what they had with Herter flying off of Sabonis was so lethal. They have not been able to replicate that again this year. And then Monk was their like whole second unit. There were times where Monk was the primary ball handler and creator, even with Fox and Sabonis on the floor. And so I don't think that's enough.
Yeah, he was a closer.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's a tough break of injuries. I do worry, though, how Sacramento is going to get back in the playoffs next year. Just the West is so tough, and you got to assume Memphis comes back just guns a-blazing next season. Maybe it's the Lakers that fall out because LeBron leaves or they're just too old, but there's so many good young teams in the West that I kind of worry about these teams that aren't getting in.
Maybe expansion's the only thing that can fix this is you get a realignment.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the West is going to be crazy next year. I mean, you've got San Antonio, you expect to take a step forward. Memphis, you expect to, you know, probably flip their record. They were 27 and 55. Wouldn't it be surprising to be 55 and 27 next year. Utah were actually good when Larry Markkanen was healthy. They're going to be better. Houston has a lot of young players that you'd expect to improve, and you don't foresee any of the, you know, the 10 playing teams dropping off drastically.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sadly, your team and my team and Aaron's team are the three candidates from, you know, maybe the Kings just weren't good enough. Lakers, if they lose LeBron, so it's just LeBron and Davis aging. Clippers, you've also got age, but like
Bobby got will be back. Paul George's free agency.
Yeah.
If the Clippers go out weak in the first round, maybe he prefers the look of Philadelphia, who can have max cap space.
Go east, young man, old man. My age, man. Just man. Go east, brother. So both taking Warriors.
Yep.
All right. 7-8. Lakers, Pelicans, who in their most recent matchup, the Lakers destroyed the Pelicans despite Brandon Ingram's return, 124-108. That game took place today, April 14th. LeBron was on another one, 28 points, 17 assists, 11 boards, 5 steals. He was just setting people up right and left. It looked really good. I don't like the Pelicans matchup for the Lakers. Like,
yeah, no, I think the Lakers are with you too, because they effectively chose this game by winning it. The Pelicans were trying to win this to stay out of the play-in. If the Lakers had of, you know, tanked this game like we saw a lot of other teams do, New Orleans would have been the six and the Lakers would have had Phoenix instead. But they, by playing this game, effectively made a decision that they preferred the Pelicans. And I agree with you. I think they are a very tough matchup for the Pelicans and have played them probably better than, you know, this might be their best matchup among high-level teams this season.
Yeah. Now, if you win this, you get the honor of being a five-game series for the Denver Nuggets. Like, that's just what it is. The other thing coming out of this game is that Davis hit the ground with back spasms. Not my favorite thing going into the playoffs.
So he's day-to-Davis, essentially.
Day-to-Davis, yep. There's some jockeying for position that you could do. You could intentionally lose this one.
I was going to say, Do you think that either team would consider risking, you know, playing the winner of Golden State or Sacramento to get OKC in the first round, which is, I think, everyone's favorite opponent out of the top three teams? Or you play it safe, you win the game, and then you get destroyed by Denver?
Listen, my favorite opponent is
I think both of these teams are bad matchups for Denver as well. Like, not just that Denver is a great team and that these are, you know, fringe playoff teams, but I think that both of these teams wouldn't play Denver well.
Yeah. Ideally, I'd love to play OKC if I'm the Lakers or Pelicans, because I just don't want to play Denver. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you can tank this one. I think you need to try to win this, because I don't want to be in a single game elimination with the Warriors. All it takes is one hot night from Clay or from Curry, or, you know, it just takes one hot night and you're eliminated. And I don't think you can do that, or don't think you want to do that.
I wonder what the if the analytics departments of these teams did a statistical analysis, I wonder what the math would say, with the idea being, what is their likelihood to beat OKC in a series versus Denver? And is that significant enough? You know, are we talking, like, if we're talking they have a 10% chance of beating Denver in a 7-game series and a 25% chance of beating OKC and a 50% chance of winning that second play-in game, then mathematically, actually, they've got a better path by losing that first play-in game, trying to win the second, and then going through OKC. And it just depends on where those odds actually flesh out.
Yeah, I just don't like it. I don't like the chances. Although, all right, hear me out. Put yourself in LeBron's mindset. Think about this if you're LeBron. If you win this game, you have to play Denver, but you either beat Denver and prove that you're a title contender, or lose to Denver and get to enjoy your entire offseason.
That's a good point. You get fewer games by winning this game. Then he can you know, go hang out with JJ Redick and drink wine.
Yeah.
Talk about how they don't like the dunker spot.
Have they been crushing the dunker spot?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it. Have you listened to Mind the Game?
I think maybe like the first two episodes.
I've seen people clip it and like talk about how elite inside it is. And I'm like, you guys have never coached 8th grade basketball, have you? Because like, yes, they're describing actions. I have a Coaching Basketball for Dummies book that describes like actions and whatnot. Like,
yeah, I mean, that is probably the most interesting thing, is that they don't shy away from using like basketball terms that the average fan wouldn't know.
Sure.
And then they have a great, you know, production team that explains it on the screen what they're talking about.
Yeah. You know, it's fine. I'm glad they're doing it.
It's like smart basketball for dummies.
My big knock against a lot of player podcasts are, one, they're either just wild outrage based bait, like the Gilbert Arenas stuff, or two, they're actually like genuinely good podcasters, but in being genuinely good podcasters, they start discussing a lot of things that aren't what I came here for. Like, I listen to The Greatest of All Talk, the GOAT show, Ben Golliver, Andrew Sharp. And Ben will go on his diatribes about his Lego building. And I'm here. I'm in for it. When JJ Redick goes on his diatribes about Earth, Wind, and Fire because they're his favorite band, totally fair. Same sort of deal. It's not an Earth, Wind, and Fire guy. And at that point, I don't care if you're a player or not. Like, you're going off on a random tangent that I don't connect to. So, yeah. So back to the Lakers-Pelicans. Who are you taking?
Lakers.
Same.
Much as it hurts me to do so.
I feel like LeBron versus Zion is a really easy matchup for LeBron. I feel like he is one of the few guys that has the speed and strength to stay with Zion, but then he also has the kind of mental fortitude and just experience with the game to know what Zion's next moves are and how to counter him, and like just the versatility of his game to go against Zion. And Herb is a wonderful defender, does not have the strength to guard LeBron.
Yeah, like so. Herb's going to make D'Angelo Russell's life very difficult while LeBron has 38 and 12.
Yeah, all right. In a hypothetical, supposing Warriors win, Pelicans lose, hypothetical 7-10 to get to play OKC, who we taking?
Sorry, that was the Pelicans versus Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the head-to-head record?
I can snag it real quick. Pelicans versus Warriors. Only a 3-game series. Warriors have won once. Pelicans have won twice, including most recently, the Pelicans won on April 12th, so just 2 days ago, against the new super lineup.
Oh,
it was
okay,
without
Brandon
Ingram.
They've got the foil.
Yeah, they won it without Ingram.
This, I think, is actually a much closer matchup. This one is really hard to pick. They're sort of two teams that are quite unique in that their strengths and like weaknesses don't really line up at all. So therefore, in theory, the Pelicans have been the better team this year. And so therefore, they should be my pick if I can't deduce a massive matchup advantage. Other than maybe Draymond is, probably the only other guy in the league besides LeBron who has the same level of strength and speed to defend Zion, that could be a good matchup for him. But then the Pelicans also have very good defenders on Steph and Herb and Dyson Daniels. And if you wanted someone to just go 94 feet, you could throw some Alvarado in there as well.
Oh, God. Jose's going to make Steph's life just miserable for the 10 minutes he's out there. The Pelicans have this small lineup that they've been – they start big with Valanciunas, but Valanciunas played like 7 minutes today against the Lakers. And I didn't watch enough of that game to know if he got hurt or if he got pulled. But it doesn't seem unusual. He's not been starting second halves the last couple of games I've been watching for them. They've been going with Larry Nance Jr. And it's a much more switchable. It's a small lineup. It's a fast lineup. And it's such a good defensive lineup because they'll have him, they'll have Herb, and they'll have Jose out there. Or Trey. And like there's a ton of length, a ton of defense. I think they have the options and the switchability to stop Golden State if both teams go small. And I don't think Golden State can go big and force them to play big. So I am taking New Orleans.
They normally close with Zion at the five and then play Ingram and Trey, which makes them a really good offensive team and a really bad defensive team. I think that the way that we've seen the Warriors most foiled in the past, going back to even what Anthony Davis did to them, what was that, two seasons ago, is when you can defend the rim really well against the Warriors, it becomes a lot harder for them. And I think the Pelicans have very bad rim defense.
I don't know. Zion is trying to block every shot. It was the Phoenix game I was watching them play. Zion had like four or five blocks in that game, I want to say. Just coming out of nowhere. Where is that game? I'll find it. But every time he could be a weak side help block, help rim protection, he was there. Murphy also was getting in a little bit on the block party. And if they're playing Larry Nance Jr. the majority of the center minutes, I think the rim protection has come a long ways. And is kind of ready this year. It was five blocks, 29 points, 10 boards, 7 assists, and 5 blocks. If Zion's playing like that, watch out. Watch out LA too. I mean, if Zion's playing defense, if Zion's hustling, he could cause a lot of problems for LeBron. But
wouldn't you love that, just LeBron and Zion going back and forth and getting stops on each other?
I would. I love it when the star players match up against each other. You know,
we get a nice D-Lo versus CJ McCollum shootout.
No, not that.
them just coming down the other end and not being able to guard each other.
But like, it takes you back to playing one-on-one or, just pick up with your friend. It's like, all right, hey, it's just the two of us. And getting that between Zion and LeBron would make for such entertaining TV.
Yeah, we're going to get it.
Yeah. All right. I'm taking New Orleans.
You're I'm
taking,
torn.
Golden State. Come on. Got to lock it in. We got two more series to discuss.
No, let's go New Orleans. They've been the better team overall. I don't think the matchups are too drastic.
It feels bad picking against Curry though, right?
I mean, less bad if he's going to be defended by Herb Jones and Dyson Daniels for the whole game.
All right. Well, that cues up the 3-6 matchup of where we have the Minnesota Timberwolves playing the Phoenix Suns. We've saw that earlier today. We've also seen all three games that they've played each other. Phoenix has won. Is this just a sad way for Minnesota to go out?
Their game today didn't matter, right? Because OKC ended up winning, in which case it locked them at the 2 seed.
It did matter in the sense that Phoenix needed to win it to avoid the play-in. So you could say that didn't matter for Minnesota as long as OKC was going to win. Although, no, I think Minnesota had the tiebreaker on OKC. Too many scenarios. But I think Minnesota had the tiebreaker if both them and OKC won. But in a three-way tie, they were third. If Denver had lost, OKC and Minnesota had won, Minnesota could have been one, is what I want to say was the scenario.
Right. All right. And Phoenix seemed to handle them pretty well. I mean, it was probably the most interesting game of the day. Like, I went back and forth between a few different games, which all seemed to fucking suck. But this one seemed the most interesting. And also seems like there's a bit of a rivalry between these guys. Like, there was some animosity. Bradley Beal talking shit to Anthony Edwards.
Yeah.
There's some of that. Ultimately, the difficulty for Minnesota is that they're probably the best rim protecting team in the league, and Phoenix only shoots mid-ranges. and so their defense is sort of nullified by that. McDaniels, from what I saw, they seem to have him guard Booker for most of the game, and I wonder whether that will continue or whether they will figure out that the size is better to have on Durant and they can have Edwards on Booker instead. But man, yeah, this is going to be a very disappointing season if this is how they go out, which we kind of, you know, it had been discussed throughout the season that, like, is this going to be, you know, another version of the Utah Jazz where they waltz through the regular season and then they're out in the playoffs? And I think that that was overstated, except that now they've got this really difficult matchup.
Yeah.
If things can go right for Phoenix, like we've seen the whole season, even when they've been healthy, like they a lot of times just haven't figured out how to play well. And they're still, I think, the worst team in the NBA in the clutch, which is important in playoff games. But it does seem like a tough matchup.
It's only important if the game is close.
Yeah.
Which this one was not particularly close. The last two times they've played them, all of the victories have been by more than 10 points. They played on April 5th. It was a 10-point victory for Phoenix. They played on November 15th. It was a 18-point victory for Phoenix. I think the point that you said in there about Minnesota being really good at rim protection and Phoenix just wanting to get to the mid-range, you know, Phoenix would do a good job of getting Nurkic a touch in the paint and then getting it kicked out. And Minnesota did a great job of stopping those paint touches, and they didn't do a great job getting back out. There also was some stuff with just Edwards. There was a time where he was guarding Durant, and then he left Durant to go double with the ball handler. And the ball handler, I think, was like Grayson Allen. And it was like, we're going to trap. And then no one like came over to help Durant. And so it became a quick swing to Durant. I was like, you got to communicate that. You can't leave Kevin Durant, even if that's the plan, and especially if that's not the plan.
All-time players to not leave open. Durant, like, third, maybe? History of the NBA players that you don't leave open.
God, would you rather leave him open or Curry?
I'd rather leave him open, I think.
Okay. Durant open.
Clay was the other one I was thinking about.
Okay. I was trying to think about Larry Bird, but I'm like, you know, Bird was very good volume at his era from three. Good percentages, good. Mm-hmm. But there's just like never a spot where I don't trust Durant. You know, he could catch at the high post, low post, post 3-point line. He could catch it at 35 feet. I don't like leaving Durant open. And really, at that height, it's so hard to close out against him.
Yeah, close out doesn't even matter. Like, if he starts to shoot and you're not there, just like... go down the other end of the court.
Yeah. I think it'd be interesting to kind of see how Minnesota counters. I wonder if they start bringing in Karl-Anthony Towns off the bench, because there's just not a good defensive matchup for him. The first possession of the game, he was on Grayson Allen.
Yeah, he got a Grayson Allen for what I saw as well.
It was like, why are you putting him there? Because he's going to get torched by Durant, because he's going to get torched by Booker, because he's going to get torched by Beal. Okay, there's not a lot of other options. We want to keep, you know, Gobert where he can protect the rim. I don't think that they can do a too big against Phoenix, and I don't think they really made Phoenix pay by going too big. You know, that's the other thing. If you're going to have the two bigs, you really need to have a way to punish Phoenix inside or with the drive, with the added height, and they didn't do that very well. So I think it's just a horrible matchup, because I've been out on Phoenix the whole year. I mean, I don't think Phoenix is that good or is a contender, but I think they're going to make the second round at this point.
Yeah, no, it's just a tough matchup. The one X factor that you could say is Phoenix don't really have any good perimeter defenders. If Anthony Edwards is going to be the best player in the series, which I think he could be, maybe that would be the difference maker. Like, does Karl Anthony Towns getting offensive rebounds over Kevin Durant, like, is that a big advantage? Durant's been a pretty good defensive rebounder throughout his career, even though he doesn't have the necessarily the strength to serve Towns. There's probably not a lot of like maybe difference in their weight. Durant's definitely gotten stronger over the years. But yeah, I think it's just a tough matchup. So I'll take the Suns also.
Yeah. You know, if I say Suns in five, that's one more win than Minnesota's got against them all year. So that's where I'm at. I don't think Anthony Edwards can drive the offense to be at a high enough level given the other pieces around him. You know, I kind of do think about this a little bit like the Allen Iverson 76ers team, where Iverson's pretty inefficient on offense, but he's also not got any offensive weapons around him, so it makes the defense really easy to key on him. He gets a lot more efficient in Denver where you have better offensive weapons. So, like, it's not a knock on Edwards, but Edwards himself is not able to elevate the offense beyond where the rest of the teammates are at. And so I'm not too worried about it if I'm Phoenix. I feel like they can just outscore them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Anthony Edwards will get them at least one game. Maybe something goes right for them one other game. So I'll take them and I'll take the Suns in six.
All right. That leaves us with the 4-5 matchup, the Los Angeles Clippers versus the Dallas Mavericks. How are you feeling? You feeling good? Feeling bad?
It's going to depend on health. Kawhi's missed like the last week or so with knee inflammation. How much of that is just them being like, all right, his knee kind of hurts and he could totally play through it, but we're about to get into the playoffs and our seed's pretty set. So we won't, you know, we're just going to not play him at all so that he can be in the playoffs. It's maybe it's just the like ecosystem that I'm in, but it seems like people are writing the Clippers off in this. Like they're saying this is a, you know, a Mav series.
I've heard that a lot. Like, it does feel like that has been the take, is that I've even heard the take like that the Clippers don't have anyone to guard Luka. And I'm like, the Clippers have some of the best people in the league to guard Luka. Like, you are going to alternate between Kawhi and Paul George. Terrence Mann could do his turn on Luka. He is also going to pressure Kyrie. Westbrook doesn't give a fuck about Kyrie. Westbrook is going to get into that guy. Not that Westbrook is like any sort of elite defender or anything, but I think he's going to be a pest and have no problem bumping, getting chippy and handsy and holdy. Like, I think the Clippers are a really good matchup for Dallas, with the one possible exception is that they don't have much lob protection. They don't, I mean, Zoo's going to be on a poster. Zoo is going to be on two or three posters after this series.
Hey, you're talking about one of the top five statistical rim protectors in the league there, Nate.
He tries. is that the numbers? When you say top five protection, are you saying, and you know, he contests a ton of shots, or what are we saying here?
Contests, deterring and lowering opponent field goal. He is a good rim protector. It seems like the narrative around the series though is that the Clippers have beaten the Mavs twice in close playoff series in the past. Kawhi's been the best player in both of those series, has outplayed Luka. But that Luka really was a one-man show. And now he's got Kyrie Irving, and that's going to be enough to push them over. One thing that's different about those series compared to this series is that the reason that Luka was a one-man offensive player is because the Mavs were playing defensive players around him. And coming into this series, where now the Clippers have also James Harden, who hasn't had, you know, who certainly doesn't have a great track record as a playoff player, but is still an elite offensive player, and when he's your third option, it makes it a lot easier for him. The Clippers primarily are an offensive team, and this Mavs team is worse on defense. And so certainly I see the perspective that Luka is one of the five best players in the world, and now he's got Kyrie Irving to support him. But Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and James Harden are also elite offensive players, and the Clippers, while imperfect at guarding Luka and Kyrie, I think have better options than the Mavs have going the other way.
Mm-hmm. And what? Are you putting Derek Jones Jr. on Kawhi? Are you putting Dante Exum on Kawhi? PJ Washington? Like if that's what they're counting on, it's PJ Washington stopping Paul George. Good luck. That is not a great defensive matchup for Dallas.
Yeah, I think Derek Jones is like a decent matchup for Paul George. But like Kawhi's just going to get to a spot every single time against him. The one guy who sneakily is a good Kawhi defender is Maxi Kleber. So if they end up going with a lot of Maxi Kleber minutes, which really only works if the Clippers go small, which they had done in previous seasons where Kawhi was effectively playing center. And so playing Maxi Kleber at the five, you were able to match him up. The Clippers don't really go small anymore. So maybe they won't have quite the opportunity.
What do you think is the Clippers closing five at this point?
It's probably just the starters. Because I think that they want the rim protection.
Yeah, I was thinking they still might go small where PG is more the five, or PG is the rim protector, the last guy back on defense. They did that a lot kind of middle of the year.
So maybe it's it's probably not Russ, but maybe it's Amir Coffey and they get another sort of shooter out there instead of
Coffey's been nice. It's like, you know,
quietly better than Terrence Mann. Sort of most talked about secret among Clippers fans is that the lineup's way better when Amir Coffey is in instead of Terrence Mann. The lineup's still excellent when Terrence Mann is in. Yeah.
Mann brings a lot on defense.
He does, yeah. He's probably one of the 10 best defensive shooting guards in the league.
I mean, D'Angelo Russell is a starting shooting guard in the league. I don't know. I don't know how impressive.
Yeah. No, he's...
I was starting to think about it. I was like, who are the good... Wait, if you're limiting this to just shooting guards, like...
All right, if I said five best, is that a spicier take?
That is a spicier take. That is a better take.
I think like no one can defend Kyrie, but I think he's a decent option. He's got good length and athleticism and quickness.
I still think Zoo's going to end up on at least a couple of posters. I think there's going to be like the Dallas Mavericks poster collection, and it's going to be the Gafford poster, the Lively poster, and insert next poster here, whether that's Derek Jones Jr. or someone. But I think there's going to be like a three-piece. Can you collect them all coming out of Dallas?
I saw a tweet from in theory, it's like a pro Clippers tweet, but really it's one of those ones that's just like saying something good to like get engagement of people saying like you're an idiot. And they had Zubats and Kai Jones, who the Clippers just signed on the freaking last day of the season, with the caption, the Twin Towers. And the Mavs reply was Gafford and
Lively.
Lively. They're like the first and second plane.
Oh, you can't make that joke. Who's? I mean, I know it's been like 20 years, but oof. I don't know if that social media guy still has that job anymore. But
I don't think it was the Mavs that tweeted it, but you know, some Mavs page. Oh,
I thought you said the Mavs. I was thinking this was an official reply.
That'd be hilarious.
If it's just some random guy, great.
Be hanging out with the magic social media guy that tweeted the Anthony Black and Grady Dick jersey swap.
What are you supposed to do? How are you not supposed to tweet? Listen, I'm just following orders. I'm the social media guy. These guys grab me. They're the players. We're paying them multiple millions of dollars. Do you want me to tell them no? It's not on my payroll to tell them no. You got to take that photo and post it.
All right. Are you going to follow the false narrative that's spreading around, Nate, or are you going to stay true to intelligent basketball takes and pick the Clippers?
I think I've developed enough of a reputation as being a Dallas Mavericks hater just because I didn't like the Luka MVP case. I've had some harsh words for Kyrie over the years and hate Texas as a state. Don't actually hate the Dallas Mavericks. They're one of the good, they're my favorite Texas team. But I am taking the Clippers. I do think that they will advance.
We're going seven.
It's a pansy pick, but yeah, I'm going seven.
Yeah, I mean you're going to do it when you get this sort of close matchup, right?
It would be intellectually dishonest to not pick them to go seven at this point. Like I could do the spicy take.
If the Mavs had have gone out and won today and got the home court, would that change your pick? So if we're calling a seven game series and then you're saying Clippers have a very narrow advantage and you flip the home court, like that's probably just about enough to flip the series. And so I wonder if they...
I'm going to say no, because the Clippers and home court aren't really a thing.
But like, you get more of your own home court. It's less so that you've got to play four games on the road, and it's more that you get to play four games at home.
I don't think the Clippers have played any games at home. I think the Clippers are playing in the Lakers building.
Until next year.
Maybe next year it'll make a difference. But I feel like this year, Clippers have an incredibly weak fan base. There's enough transplants in LA that they have a pretty decent size. I don't think it boosts the Clippers enough to play in Los Angeles. And I feel like they're just used to like playing road think games enough.
Okay. So you think that the Clippers are a solid enough road team that Dallas having their home court, which is a good fan base, wouldn't be enough of an advantage.
The Clippers are 25-16 at home, and they are 26-15 on the road. They are one game better on the road. I think you know it does really help. Actually, never mind. Dallas is 25-16 at home and 25-16 on the road. So in the sense that you're not giving Dallas another home game, like that's probably helpful, but. You know, I'm not too worried about it if I'm the Clippers. What is the playoff matchup that we didn't get that you really wanted to see happen? Like if you could, you know, shake these up in a snow globe and get a different matchup, what were you really hoping for?
Let me have a quick look. I assume we're talking about realistic ones that almost happened. Let's see here.
I have one very distinct picked out.
You give yours first since you got it planned.
I wanted Phoenix versus OKC. That would have involved Phoenix not getting the six. Being in the 7-8, losing, or OKC falling down to the 3. However it needed to happen, I wanted the Thunder's first playoff series to be against Durant. And like that, you know, kind of karmic situation to come back around where Shea, to like ascend the mantle, first has to defeat the last man to get them out of the first round.
That is solid.
I'm really hoping for a OKC Clippers second round where it's Russ and Paul George, but it's not quite the same
against
as
Shea.
Durant. Yeah.
And also it's like the oldest team in the league against like the youngest, really good team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if outside of that, I don't know if we were robbed of any great matchups.
No, I think Indiana playing Milwaukee is a great matchup just from how spicy that's been over the course of the regular season.
I think Philly falling down into the play-in actually gets us an even more interesting first round.
It does. Although Cleveland-Orlando is how you're going to really know the like basketball nerds. If you're like, hey, yeah. what game did you watch last night? And if they tell you Cleveland-Orlando, you're like, oh, you like this sport. You're like serious about it. Because that's going to be a rock fest. That's going to be games under 100, potentially both teams playing excellent defense on each other. But I think that is going to be the least watched series of the first round.
Hands down.
I'm trying to think. There's anything else that I would really love to see. I mean, I am a little bit sad in the play-in we're not getting a Lakers-Warriors. Just Curry, LeBron, been the greatest kind of rivalry fight between the two of them for the last couple of years. You know, to not have a Lakers Warriors or Lakers Suns and have LeBron, Durant, feel a little bit robbed of those two.
Yeah, do we get robbed of a great play-in game? Like, let alone playoffs.
I'm sure the Pelicans will be a great play-in game. I do think they sandbagged it trying to lose that one. But I don't think they were quite as concerned with losing as they maybe should have been. And I think the Lakers showed a lot of their cards, a lot of what they could do. So the Pelicans now have like time to prepare and change to potentially win. So
I love a positive spin on a team just, you know, way out underperforming and losing to a worse team because of a bad matchup.
Yeah, you gotta spin these sometimes. And on the completely other end of the brackets, the super loser end of the bracket, the 10 teams that are not in the play-in bubble, we now have a clear lottery lineup with the Pistons at the bottom, followed by the Wizards. Portland edged out with Charlotte by virtue of tiebreaker. San Antonio is the fifth team. Toronto is sixth. Their pick goes to San Antonio if it falls to seven. So that something to watch for on lottery night. Memphis is 8. Utah is 9. And Brooklyn is 10. And I definitely miscounted in there somewhere. Detroit, Washington, Portland, then Charlotte, San Antonio, Toronto, Memphis, Utah, Brooklyn is 9. Then Atlanta, then Chicago, and then in theory, the Houston Rockets, because the play-in makes for weird things. Any final basketball takes on the week for you, or any thoughts on the lottery?
No, I couldn't even name a player in the draft, so I don't think I'll have any lottery takes yet. We'll just say, do you think that the NBA could have scheduled today better, as in like staggering the games? Like when I looked at this, I thought they would have like this full day of like important games to like, you know, on my day off to just sit on the couch for an entire day and watch basketball. And instead, they had all the games on at the exact same time.
So here's what I think they should have done. You kind of know who are going to be the bad teams this year. Like, it didn't take a rocket scientist to be like, listen, Charlotte's probably not playing for anything on this day. Detroit, probably not playing for anything on this day. Washington, probably not playing for anything on this day. This is the day you send them international. You send them to London. You send them to Spain. You have these games going on so that we can start watching, you know, a nice 10 a.m. start time for us here in the States. Watch all day long. I like the fact that they're over now. It makes our podcast easy to record.
Yeah, that is the one good thing. When I saw that the late games were starting at 7:30, I was like, oh, at least we can still record.
Yeah, but I do wish there was at least like a half hour stagger. I get why they didn't do it, because once you know if a team's trying to win or lose, you know what you need to do.
Yeah, except that teams just lost intentionally even while doing it blind.
Yeah.
Like if the Clippers had played first and lost to the Rockets and then Dallas could have got the 4 seed by just winning, then maybe they actually tried and you get a really good Shea versus Luka game.
Yeah.
Whereas every team just assumed that the better team was going to win and tanked accordingly.
I would have liked at least a little bit of staggering, just so that way you could hop from fourth quarter to fourth quarter. like you do on a normal game day or watching. You know, it's like, hey, this game's close in the fourth. I'm going to watch it. Okay, what's the next closest game in the fourth? And keep jumping around. Whereas not this today was like everything started in the same, you know, 5-10 minutes and ended in the same 5-10 minutes. So it was really hard to jump around.
Hmm.
But it was a good day for basketball. It was a good day for hoops.
Yeah, it is. It is still nice to have 15 games on in a single day.
Yeah. All right, Dylan, any final takes?
Not at all. Not at all.
All right. We'll be back recording next Sunday, posting next Monday with first round takes, how things are going. We'll have seen a couple of the games. We'll know who the 1 and 2 seeds are playing. You can find me here. Find me on TikTok, Nate_HoopsTemple. And you can find Dylan, president of Basketball Conversations, on TikTok. If he gets 500 followers, he'll start recording content. That's the deal, right?
Something like that, yeah. Or you can find me every week on the Hoops Temple podcast, and you can send your love and hate to hoopstemple@gmail.com. Please not hate.